This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U Mobile.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill, we welcome Professor Brian Kaplan, professor at George Mason University and the author of The Case Against Education. Thank you so much, Professor, for joining us this morning.
Happy to be here.
All right, Professor, let's begin with a brief overview of The Case Against Education as outlined in your book.
Sure. What I say is that even though education generally is good for individuals' careers, it's not very good for society. And the main reason is most of what you study in school you never use after the final exam. So the idea that you're building a lot of useful skills in school, I say, is greatly exaggerated. And I say the real reason why education pays is mostly that it's a way of getting certification. It's a way of persuading or convincing employers that you're good because you've jumped through all of the hoops. You've done the full academic curriculum that's expected of you. You've got good grades. You've got fancy diplomas. And here's the thing. While this is a good way for an individual to advance their career, it's not a good way for a country to become rich, because if everyone is just spending time studying stuff they don't need to know, this is really a rat race. It's really a futile process. And that's the heart of my case.
And in your book, you mentioned signaling quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about what signaling actually entails.
Yeah, so signaling is a fancy word for persuasion or convincing people, but essentially it just says that when you go to school and do well and finish your program, this is a good way of showing employers that you're actually a very good worker. It's a way of showing that you're smart, way that you're showing that you're hardworking, way of just showing that you're conformist and obedient and that you're willing to comply with the expectations of society. Think about it this way. There's really two ways you could raise the value of a diamond. One is you could give it to an expert gem cutter to make the diamond perfect. Another one, though, is you could give it to a diamond appraiser who looks at it and says, this is perfectly flawless, and puts a little sticker on it. And the usual view about education, that it's preparing you for the real world and giving you useful skills, that's like a gem cutter. The signaling story is that what school is doing is it's certifying you. It's putting a sticker on you saying that you're top quality or at least good quality. And again, what difference does it make? The difference is that if everyone has good stickers, then you can't get a good job with those stickers. You need to get more stickers and more stickers. So in the book, I talk a lot about credential inflation, which just means that over the past 50 years, the amount of education that you need to get a good job has just gone up. And again, it's not mostly that jobs are actually more cognitively demanding or harder. Rather, the main difference is just that when a lot of people have a high school degree doesn't persuade employers that you're good anymore. You need to get a college degree. If enough people get a college degree, then you need to get a master's degree and so on.
Before we dive deeper into your case against education, first, help me understand this. And how do you square off your position as a professor at George Mason University, what you call a dream job in your book, right? So given your position in academia, how do you square that off with this case that you make against formal education?
All right. Well, I think of myself as a whistleblower. I'm someone who's inside the system telling taxpayers and really, really the whole population that they're getting ripped off, and that we're spending an enormous amount of time studying subjects that you're not really, really going to use. And even why would a professor say this? I'd say really only a professor can say this. If I were just a blogger, people would say, well, he's jealous that he isn't able to get a real job at university. He's mad that he can't get paid to go and work on ideas. And what I can say is, look, I've done all of the things necessary to get this job. I have this dream job for life. And so, I've got nothing to complain about. So, this is a great system for me, but I think that the world ought to know that they're getting ripped off.
This case that you make appears counterintuitive, right? How do you make the distinction between the individual versus society? Because, we have been taught that more education, more educated individuals ultimately will bring more good to the broader society. So how do you make that distinction there?
Right. So I don't think that my case is counterintuitive. I think it's more impolite. I generally find when I talk to individuals about their education and I just say, so how much of what you learned in school do you actually use on the job? People just laugh. because they didn't like barely use anything that I learned in school on the job. Like, you know, almost all the subjects that I took, I like, you know, like after the final exam, never needed to know them again. And what I do on the job, I learned by doing. I showed up with my educational credentials that got me the job. But then once I'm hired, then they say, all right, you know what? You don't really know how to do anything and we're going to teach you. And you know, that's really the kind of society that we have in the United States. You can tell me how relevant it is in Malaysia, but it's one where you have to go to school for 13 or 17 years to finally get trained to be a secretary or, you know, to be a waiter in a nice restaurant. You know, the reason why people don't say what I'm saying very often, it's not that it's counterintuitive. It really fits people's experience very well. People know that what they're studying isn't going to be useful after the final exam most of the time. But rather, it's the kind of thing that's just not polite to say. It makes people feel bad about all the time they put in. It makes it sound like you don't like children and you don't like teachers and so on. And, you know, so all I can say is, look, I like children. I like teachers. They're nice people. But you know, doesn't mean that they're actually doing the useful stuff that people think they're doing.
Just to be clear, your argument is that these certifications, these degrees, are still necessary in today's society. It's just not as useful as we've been led to believe.
Right. I'd say that's an understatement. I'd say that degrees are more necessary than ever, even though they're not very. Even though what you're learning usually isn't very useful at all. Right. So, like the actual financial payoff for college in the United States, it's enormous. There are so many jobs that you used to be able to get without college that now you need a college degree to at least be likely to get those jobs. And yet, when you look at the curriculum, most of what you study isn't anything that you're going to use after graduation. So, I mean, that's the unfortunate situation that we're in. We created this system where, in their own self-interest, individuals try very hard to do well in school. And yet as a society, again, it's mostly just running on a treadmill. Like we're just delaying adult life. And again, like we really learn how to do jobs mostly once we actually have the jobs and finally can get some real useful training.
So even as a filter, right, these degrees, isn't that enough justification for more education? Because we've got a larger population and you need to perhaps filter out the wheat from the chaff. Wouldn't that warrant or justify these institutions of higher learning?
No, not really. I mean, here's the thing. You know, if what you're doing is just filtering people, then you could get just as good a filter if everyone had one fewer degree. And again, that really is the system that we had about 70 years ago, is that people just had one fewer degree. I mean, discrimination aside, it's not clear that we're even better at finding high-quality people compared to long in the past. I mean, the main thing is just that the more you subsidize education, the more you encourage it, the more people get. But the more people get, the more you need to make employers think that you're good enough to be worthy of an interview. And again, that's the problem. You know, there's so many jobs that your parents or grandparents were able to get right out of high school, where now you actually would generally need a college degree to get them, or maybe even more.
Interesting word there, subsidized, right? So this appears to be a case more so against the public funding of education, more so than formal education in itself. Because in the conclusion of your book, you spoke about how perhaps the burden of financing education should be placed on the individual student or his or her family, as opposed to having government intervene in that way.
All right. Yeah, so I mean, it's true that you know, like the main recommendation that I make in the book, the main policy reform that I push is just spending less on education, encouraging it less. And I say that's just the like such a simple and easy way to reduce this problem. If making education extremely accessible has failed to give people good jobs and instead has mostly just caused credential inflation, the obvious thing is to say, well, let's subsidize it less. Let's encourage it less so that we can get credential deflation. We can go back to a world where you can get a good job right out of high school. It's just a very different argument from the usual one complaining about government just saying that they're just not very good at teaching their classes. When I compare public and private education in the U.S., I honestly don't see that what they're doing is very different. So you just, you know, the main thing is just that the government tries to encourage there to be, you know, more and more education, even though without really looking at what's being taught or whether it's actually useful skills.
Let's say we play along, right, and we cut public funding to education, or at least reduce the amount of subsidies there. Right now, while theoretically it may solve credential inflation, but then you would think that inequalities will then widen, right? Because those who still can afford those degrees, those who can still afford to continue in that signaling vein, they will continue to get those college degrees. So wouldn't the solving of credential inflations then be offset by the negatives in terms of growing inequalities?
Right. So it's a very natural question. It's a very natural fear. And if what schools were teaching was actual job skills, you'd be totally right. But if what schools are doing is giving people stickers, then again, the more accessible you make it, the more stickers that you need. So think about this. Would you rather be a high school dropout today in America or a high school dropout in America in 1950? In 1950, there just wasn't much of a stigma against it because there were so many good workers that had not finished high school. Today, there's a huge stigma against it. So, I mean, when people think, get worried about inequality, I think that they are focusing on they're imagining a case where just one individual doesn't get to go to school. And I'm saying, look, it's very different if a whole lot of people don't go. It just changes the meaning of the degrees. And again, so if you think about, you'll go back a long time, go back to late 19th century America. Back then, it really was the case that almost everyone who went to college was rich. But it was also a world where it would be very foolish for an employer to say, we're only going to consider people with college degrees because you'd be throwing out almost all the qualified applicants. And furthermore, back in those days, the main thing that you showed with your education was just that you came from a rich family. It just didn't show nearly as much about your actual quality. So you always need to be thinking about how does what the government is doing change the meaning of the degrees. And I say what they've done right now is they change degrees so that they're so common that they don't really show very much. And yet if you don't have one, then it looks really bad. And at the same time, it's so accessible that employers can reasonably say, well, if you were any good, then you'd have the degree. Right? And in a world where there was lower subsidies, not only would there be many qualified people without the degree that employers would want to consider, but also the degree would just mean something different. It would mostly mean that you come from a rich family, which would also mean, well, I don't particularly want someone just from a rich family. I want a good worker.
I'm speaking to Brian Kaplan, a professor at George Mason University and the author of The Case Against Education. This is The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Breakfast Grill. I'm Tan Chung Han, and on the line we have Professor Brian Kaplan, author of The Case Against Education. Now, Professor, you make a pretty fascinating, if not perhaps contrarian, argument here in your book. Now, say, as opposed to viewing higher education through the lens of salaries and employability, what about the softer aspects of education, from cultural capital to networking opportunities, developing those softer skills, or even the notion of just learning for the sake of knowledge itself? I mean, doesn't that erode the case against education?
All right. So what I say in the book is two things. First of all, I totally agree with the ideals that you're talking about. I'm a professor, culture and ideas are my life. This means a great deal to me. But the second thing I say is in the case against education is you should not give schools credit for their intentions. The fact when schools say we're trying to do something, that's not good enough. You say, well, do you actually succeed? And in the case against education, I go over all the evidence that I can find on the extent to which schools actually do succeed in making students interested in ideas and culture. And just broadening their minds and teaching them about the world outside of work. And the honest answer is they seem to do next to nothing. Right? And you can see the same thing for things like teaching people about teaching people to be better voters or better citizens. I mean, the actual knowledge that American adults have about their own government is so small that and yet the number of years that we spend studying it are so numerous. I think you just have to say, wow, like either you're terrible at teaching the students or they forget virtually everything that they learn very quickly. Right. And either way, I just think that it doesn't come up to much of a case for education because the performance is so poor.
Haven't markets already proven that more education is better? The candidate with higher education credentials tend to be more productive than those with less credentials. I mean, hasn't that already been proven?
That's exactly what I'm saying, but I'm saying that for the individual, this is very important news and good to know. But again, for society, what I'm saying is that if you were to go and get everyone to go to college, say, the result wouldn't be that that everyone becomes much more productive. The result would be that you'd need a college degree to be a janitor. And then if you wanted to get a better job, you need to get a master's degree or a PhD or some other professional degree. I'm not someone who says that people with degrees aren't actually better workers. What I'm saying is we need to think very hard about why they're better workers. Is it because they were better to begin with and they use the degree to convince employers? Or was it because the education actually transformed them from a bad worker into a good worker? But nevertheless, I say that the main reason why education does pay is not that it is actually changing you, but rather that it is a way of convincing employers that you've got good traits if you've got them.
You alluded to this distinction a couple of times already, you know, whereby your book is based on research that is US-centric, where else it might be a different case here in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So doesn't your case against education assume a certain level of privilege? Now, it's a first world problem, where else in the developing world, perhaps, the argument doesn't really hold as much water. Because, you know, say, in more developed economies, you know, there are perhaps other sociological factors that can get you ahead or further in life, whereas in the developing world, we still need to rely on more education.
Right. Well, that's possible, but there is quite a bit of evidence that the view that you're saying is probably, you know, probably wrong. You know, there's really two kinds of evidence that when you put them together, they lead to this lesson. So first of all, there's been a lot of work on the effect of education on national economic outcomes. So like if you raise education by, say, a year, how much does that raise the GDP of your country? Right now, if the main reason why education raised income was just that it was teaching useful skills, then you'd expect that a year would have about the same effect for an individual as it would for a country. Right. So if a year of education raises an individual's income by 10%, then if you raise the nation's education by a year or the workforce of the nation by a year, it would raise the nation's income by 10%. Researchers have generally found a much smaller effect of education on nation's income than on individual's income, which very much fits my story. And then furthermore, what's striking is there's been a lot of work on just how poor education in third world countries is. You know, like India stands out as being a country where very often teachers don't even show up to teach their classes. And yet even in countries where the actual instruction, the quality is very low, it still seems to pay very well for individuals. So in India, even when teachers aren't showing up, it still seems like finishing more years of school does raise your earnings quite a bit. So again, if the reason why it worked is because the teachers were actually teaching useful skills, this would be very puzzling. Whereas again, if it's just a matter of I have more education than other people, I've jumped through more hoops, that means that I'm probably going to be a better worker. Because that story really can explain all the facts put together. So now again, I would say that, you know, there's probably, you know, more variation here. So I know you're right next to Singapore, which is famous for having a very high quality education system where people actually learn literacy and numeracy to a high level. And again, I think it's very likely that if you could get those skills up, that would be very good for national development. But that's very different from just throwing more money at the school system or just trying to have kids spend more time in school. Again, it's the difference between focusing on what kids actually learn versus just focusing on how hard have we tried and how much have we sacrificed, right? And it's really the first thing that matters. It's like what kids actually know and whether it's really useful for them in real life.
Practical question here. So then what do you substitute the status quo with?
I think the main substitute is just people starting work at an earlier age and learning by doing, which is the actual way that people acquire useful skills most of the time. In the book, I point out there's been a lot of research on how people get good at their jobs. And the punchline is very simple. People get good at their jobs by practicing those specific jobs. The way that you get good at chess is by playing lots of chess. The way that you get good at playing the violin is by playing the violin a lot. The way that you get good at computer programming is by doing lots of computer programming. So, basically we've created a system where you're spending, well over a decade practicing skills that you don't need to know. And then finally, at the end, you are deemed worthy to start practicing what is actually relevant for in real life. I'd say it would just be a better world for students, for taxpayers, for employers, for consumers, if people would just go and start learning by doing at an earlier age. right? So I also in the book just talk about vocational education as, you know, as a, you know, as something that at least is a very good alternative for kids that just don't like regular academics very much. So, you know, like the German and Swiss system where kids that just are not very fond of academics get trained to be auto workers or mechanics when they're, you know, when they're 13 or 14 or 15. So, you know, I think these are all just much more socially functional systems than the one that we've got today, where it's so based upon delaying adulthood for, you know, for a great many years.
Right. So if that is the recipe, right, start work earlier and then just stick at it, that also assumes that that particular career path will remain for the long run. So it brings back the theme again that we spoke about earlier, the tremendous disruption that we're seeing when it comes to jobs. The reason people are, you know, afforded the luxury of making perhaps multiple lateral career moves is because they have this same standard broad-based education. So by removing that broader-based education and just focusing on that one particular skill set, wouldn't that limit the future employability of individuals?
No, because schools don't actually teach broad-based skills most of the time. You know, again, if you go and get a typical college major, it hasn't taught you broad-based skills for a lot of different occupations. It's really taught you how to be a professor of that subject. Right? So, you know, I'm an economics professor. What do I teach? Well, what I teach will be very useful for a student who wants to become a professor, for a student who wants my job. For the jobs they're actually going to get, what I teach really is barely relevant, honestly. Right. So, you know, I mean, I think, you know, the idea that that's, you know, regular education is providing broad-based skills is, I think, just propaganda. And, you know, what's really going on is they're just preparing you for no job that you're likely to have. And then finally you get a job as, you know, with that with the help of that credential where you can finally learn one. Right. But again, like, you know, if the world is changing, then the sensible thing is to prepare people for jobs that, like, seem likely to work out for them. Although you know that maybe it won't happen and they will have to change, but that's the same problem that you have right now. Right now, the first job that you get out of your undergraduate degree, there's a good chance that that job will get disrupted and you'll have to go do something else, right? And, you know, you might say, well, hopefully all of that great education that I got, you know, 20 years ago is going to really help me. But again, like I say, like, it might help you just get your foot in the door, but it doesn't mean that you actually learned a lot of useful stuff there. It means you're going to have to start over and just learn a new career.
What do you think is the practicality of such an argument then? I mean, where do you foresee the will for less education coming from? Would it have to start politically, or would it have to perhaps come from future generations where perhaps the rising unaffordability of higher education that reaches a breaking point? So is it a top-down thing or a bottom-up thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, you know, as long as voters believe that more education spending is better for the country, I think it's going to keep going. There's a little bit of room for elites to just try to trim the budget a little bit, right? But I guess the main thing that I would recommend for elites that really want to change things is just to change the rhetoric and just to emphasize there's a big difference between what schools claim they're trying to do and what they actually accomplish. And we shouldn't listen to what they claim they're trying to do. We should focus on what they've really done. You know, we should look very closely not just at the earnings of college graduates and high school graduates. We should look at what they're actually studying and what skills they have and what skills they've actually learned. Right. So, you know, just for elites to go and encourage greater skepticism, I think there's some value to that. And that might gradually, very slowly change the minds of the public and make them realize that, you know, a world where everyone goes to college is not a great world to live in, because it means that you need a college degree just to get a basic job. You know, in terms of what, you know, what I think is realistic, if my book caused global education spending to fall by 1%, I'd consider that an amazing achievement, because, you know, it really is swimming against a very powerful current, right? So there's, you know, my arguments, but then there is every demagogue saying, look, our country needs to provide the best possible education to everyone. It's like, I don't care what the cost is. You know, this is a very popular thing to say. Politicians can get elected saying this kind of stuff, but I'm here to say that's just nonsense. It's terrible, and you should stop saying stuff like that.
Thank you so much for your time. That was Professor Brian Kaplan, Professor of Economics at George Mason University in Virginia, USA, and also the author of The Case Against Education. I'm Tan Chung Han, and this is The Breakfast Grill right here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile. Your passion drives our unlimited ideas.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.